How's that?
Quite the sound difference.
We've got... Whoa. We're just going into this, Doc. You ready?
Sure.
Are we rolling?
Hang on.
Welcome to the Eric Anders Lang Show. It's a bit of a mess. Back by popular demand, Dr. Parent. How do you feel?
I feel great. You know, we always have a great time together. And since we met, you know.
Right.
Inviting you, you were a little shocked when you said, how do I find out more about this meditation stuff? And I said, well, why don't you come up and I'll give you instruction.
I was definitely shocked. I thought maybe you were going to kill me, but instead you just killed the bad part of me. Or what did you, what did you do?
I helped you wake up.
Right.
You know, that we've talked about Zen golf and its origin in Buddhist teachings. And I don't think a lot of people understand that Buddhism isn't a religion like other theistic religions, like Judaism or Christianity or Islam. And in fact, if you were to translate it into English, Buddhism would translate as awake-ism.
Right.
So it really is not so much about an individual who lived 2,500 years ago, but about the capacity for us to wake up to our full potential that everybody has. And that's what always excited me about it, and that's what invited you into it.
So would you say for people that are, you know, yet to be introduced to your work and your mission, would you say that your main like theme or goal is waking up on the golf course?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a mission. I was just talking to Evan about it, and people come to me because they know that if they improve their mental game, that'll help their golf. So they want to come to me to improve how their mind works so that to get better at golf. And I use golf as an entryway or gateway or avenue to help them understand their mind better. So it's golf to wake up.
What have you seen any... what's the best example of that you've seen in your career as a golf / meditation teacher? Is that how you describe it?
Yeah, I would describe it that way. And I think the most exciting thing is that it's not just one person, but it's many, many people. I even say, when somebody says, hey, Doc, this is about a lot more than just golf, isn't it? I say,
yeah.
Congratulations, you made the honor class.
That would be the first time in my life I've heard that.
So we have a lot of people who have said that the book Zen Golf and my lessons with them have been as important or more important for their lives than for their golf. And that is really my bottom line. When I first wrote it, the manuscript, the editor called me and said, you know, some of your chapters don't mention golf. I said, yeah, I know. It's a life book as well as a golf book. They said, yeah, well, we wanted to publish a golf book, so would you mind adding some golf into those chapters?
Didn't you have to change the title? Wasn't there like a title swap there?
Well, there was, but in filling out the chapters, if you read Zen Golf, you'll see some chapters where golf isn't mentioned until near the end. Either in the last paragraph or near the end, there's one paragraph that starts, and in golf. That means I had to add that one in. but you know, one of the sections in Zen Golf is about what's called Shambhala golf. And Shambhala is a legendary kingdom in Asia. It's basically the Asian version of Camelot, where it's this enlightened kingdom. And so... But I realized, well, people are not going to be all, they're not going to know what that means. So I submitted it as Enlightened Golf. And Doubleday is the publisher. And the editor called me and said, well, you know, the sales team thinks Enlightened Golf is a little soft. They wondered if you could call it Zen Golf. And I said, oh, you know, there's Zen Cats and Zen Dogs.
Wait, there's a book called Zen Cats.
This was 16 years ago. Zen Golf came out 16 years ago.
I need to. And, have you read Zen Cats? Can we just talk about that for a second?
I just saw Yoga for Cats, but let's go back to. It's a pretty funny calendar.
This was almost called Enlightened Golf. That's so. I'm holding Zen
yes,
Golf.
Yes, that's right.
For those of you that are listening, you can watch this on YouTube and see me and Doc in our wonderful. What are we? We're in glory. Are we glorious right now? What are we?
We're enlightening, enlightening the listening public. So and viewing public. So the whole idea was, the editor said, well, you know, it's your book. You can call it what you want, mm-hmm. but I don't think the salespeople are going to get behind it. So I said, let me see if I understand this right. Okay, I can call it what I want and no one will ever see it. Or we call it what you want and they'll get behind it and sell it. I said, you can call it Upside Down Golf if you want to. I don't care. Just, I want it in people's hands. And you know what? They were right. It's a crisper title. The book design that they came up with, I had in mind a lot of sky and a little earth underneath. Hand me the book, you can see. So I had in mind that, you know, you'd see a little golf course down there near the bottom. They said, no, we want it all blue with just the golf ball in the corner that that I had in mind. And they were right. It's very unusual, and it's the all blue golf book. Almost every golf book has green in it.
And what's cool is this is essentially for anyone who's really interested in the mental game, this is, would you say, the Bible? I mean, it's bold. I know it's bold, but I made bold claims.
Yeah, I would call it the main text. And then, of course, there's Zen Putting and The Art of the Mental Game. And my last golf book that I've written so far is How to Make Every Putt.
Right.
The secret to winning golf's game within the game.
So I'm curious to know when you're describing this experience. By the way, for everyone who's listening now, we did a podcast 6 months ago maybe, and I haven't ever had as many responses to a podcast as the one you and I did. A lot of responses to people saying, I shot my best round while listening to mostly you talking, not really me. You know, or they were turned on to Zen Golf and all of a sudden shot their best round. Like a lot, we basically are responsible for a lot of people's lowest rounds. And I wanted to bring you back to celebrate for an hour.
I do enjoy that. And in fact, last night I did a FaceTime lesson. It was 6:15 Pacific time. It was on Tuesday. It was 12:45 South Australia time in Adelaide, Australia, on Wednesday. So it was the next day. I asked, what's going to happen tomorrow?
Were you giving a lesson to my ex-wife?
Really know. No. So this lady had listened to your podcast, ordered the audio version of Zen Golf that I recorded, listened to it, and said, and what she said to me was, I realized this is what I needed for my golf, but also for my life. And I want to do lessons with you. And so we just set up times halfway around the world.
You know, it's really...
It's like being in the same room. It's very much like you and I sitting across the table from each other, only on a screen and the same distance.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting is there are people in New Zealand and Australia right now watching this video, and they think they're in the same room.
That's right. Exactly.
And on some level, they are.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, it's good. I'm glad you're here. You've made it 10 minutes in, so that's great. Congratulations. No, two things. One is, well, the book. So at what point, you know, you're making this book, you're, you know, taking advice from a publisher on marketing and things like that. At what point are you like, whoa, this is working? Like at what point in Dr. Parent's life of, because at that point you were you already teaching on tour?
Yes, I was already teaching on tour.
And the book is your first real big swing.
What the book is, ideally, I was going to just write 2 or 3 page magazine articles in golf magazines. And I wanted it always to not be theory, but to be something that came out of my golf lessons. So most of the stories in Zen Golf are anecdotes of elements of golf lessons that I taught that are the jumping off point for explaining aspects of the mental game that will help people have less frustration, more consistency, and lower scores. And so those three things are pretty much what golfers all desire. The only time I've heard somebody disagree is they say, I want less consistency, Because I'm consistently bad, yes. But that's not really what we mean by the consistency. Right. So that was my intention. And then I was introduced by my sister to a literary agent who had heard about it and had said, Buddhism and golf, that's really hot. I want to see it. So I got out my notes from my lessons. It was a lot like what Harvey Penick's son did for his book. He had a shoebox full of notes from his lessons. I had a computer full, but I got out all my notes and wrote chapters. And she sent it in to Doubleday, and they said, yeah, this is great. Oh, we want it. So that I had to write the book in 2 months.
Whoa.
So somebody said,
like you'd already written it.
Somebody said, how long did it take you to write it? And I said, 20 years, because it was accumulation of all my lessons and my notes.
That's the Picasso answer.
But then I put it together, and I felt like it was really good. The order of the chapters, kept having to change them around, and it was almost random which order it ended up in, because they all are interwoven.
Right.
You can read any one chapter and it stands alone, but it relates to lots of the other chapters. So it doesn't matter what order you read them in.
Yeah. Because a lot of people read things out of order, like myself.
And I intentionally made it 2.5 pages max per chapter, because people turn a book, they're reading a book, they open a chapter, they go, ooh, how long is this? Oh, 15 pages. Yeah, I can't do that. No. Put it away, never get back to it. 2 pages? Yeah, I can do that. Then they look, how's the next one? 2 pages? Sure. And they do that 8 times and they've read 16 pages.
What's really interesting, but at what point did you realize that the book was successful? That was my question. Like, at what point were you like, oh my goodness? Like, because you're...
I knew that it was good, and right. I knew that it worked because it came from my lessons. And they were very, very effective. So I knew that it worked, and I knew that the principles that I was presenting were universal principles.
At what point did you know, though? Because it's a bestseller, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
At what point were you like, oh my goodness, I have written a bestseller.
That was in December.
I've made it. Not when did they tell you it's a bestseller, but when did you know that it was really doing it?
Okay. The book came out in May 2002.
Okay.
That summer, it made it in the 3 books that were picked by Golf Digest for... your summer reading.
Well,
and at the U.S. Open, this is when I really felt it. At the U.S. Open on Long Island, Bethpage Black, and they're going back there for the PGA this year.
Yes.
There was a golf writer from Newsday newspaper, 150,000 circulation in all of, or a million in Long Island, New York. And she said it was about the mental game. And she'd gone into a bookstore to see what books, golf books there were on the mental game. And she said there were all these mind-bending tomes of psychological blah, 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 blah. And she went through some of the psychological language, she said, which was kind of a turnoff. And then in the next to last paragraph, she said, and then there's my favorite, Zen Golf. And she says one paragraph about it, and then she said, and the chapter titles, isn't where you have to hit it from punishment enough? And then her last word in the article was, exactly. And that's when I knew.
Right.
And I had never met her before. She found the book herself and chose it of all the mental game books there. That's her favorite. So I said, oh, I think we got something.
Right.
Then I was interviewed on the Golf Channel that winter for a two-minute interview that... I mean, it was like the end of November, Q School hadn't started. There were no tournaments that week. So who's watching Golf Channel? And the publisher ran out of books.
Whoa.
So it worked.
No books.
Yeah, that's when I knew.
That's like a hipster merchandise company. Just sell out like immediately.
Yeah, but there were 25,000 printed, so that was good.
That's good. How many have you sold so far, do you know?
In print... digital and audio in worldwide in 10 different languages, about a million.
20 billion.
About a million.
A million.
Yeah. That was my goal.
That is awesome.
Yeah, it's very gratifying. You know what the cool thing is now? I have junior golfers that are my students that were not born when Zen Golf was written.
Whoa.
So that's pretty cool.
Do you give them a lot of shit?
No, I am very encouraging.
Who's the, so, okay. So we've got, you know, a lot of people who have responded to the mm-hmm. podcast. Mm-hmm. You know, we were just talking about, some experiences you've had with the Shivas Iron Society. Mm-hmm. They, if you haven't read Golf in the Kingdom, I think that's an important read. Would you say, what would you say people should read that's not written by you?
Yeah, I think that's great. Michael Murphy wrote a great allegory of his experience. It was his experience on his way to an ashram in India in the 1960s. He wrote this in 1972.
This is you're talking about the book like it's a true story.
No one knows, but we think that it's rooted in some truths that then Michael, in his Irish storytelling unique way, elaborated very, very beautifully. And so that's great. Other books that I think people, one of my favorites is by Thich Nhat Hanh, a Vietnamese Zen master, called Peace is Every Step. And it's really beautiful. He's a poet as well as a teacher. So the writing is really, really beautiful. And we were just talking about an iconic Zen book called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Mm. And I use a quote from that in the very first chapter, that in the expert's mind, there are a few possibilities. In the beginner's mind, there are many. So always maintain that beginner's mind. And we talked about thinking outside the box.
You might probably benefit the listeners by explaining whatever you just said. People who haven't heard that. We glossed over a large principle in your world.
Well, beginner's mind means that you don't have set preconceptions and opinions and think you know everything. So it's really being open-minded and open to learning. In Zen Golf, I talk about an old Buddhist metaphor of receiving teachings. And the student is like some kind, a different kind of vessel or cup, right? So you have right side up. There's one that's upside down. So when the water's poured, nothing goes in. You really haven't really shown up. And the other one is it's right side up, but there's a hole in the bottom. So whatever goes in goes. It's like in one ear and out the other. So you don't remember anything. You're not really paying attention. The third kind, it's upright and doesn't have a hole, but it's coated with what was in there last time. So what comes in new is really not new. It's mixed with the old stuff and edited or polluted. So if you have a clean cup that's upright with no hole, then you can receive the teachings without having your version of things. I encounter that with students when I say, well, you know, you could look at it this way, and then they name some famous golf instructor, well, so-and-so said this, and so-and-so said that, and I think it should be this, and I think it should be that. And I said, are you paying me to give me a lesson, or do you want to hear what you know I'm suggesting you think about? So it's the kind of student that you want is like a sponge, open-minded, wanting to learn, wanting to let go of old ideas and explore new ones.
I had an. Can I switch gears?
Yeah, sure.
I had an experience this morning at Evan.
Up gear or lower gear?
I haven't decided yet. I'm just putting it in. I'm putting the clutch in, and then I'm just going to pick a gear. If you're watching the video here, and you're wondering who Doc's looking at, he's looking at Evan over here.
Hi.
I can't really turn the camera, but the point is, Evan and I played golf, and you know, whenever this comes out, I don't know, but yeah, let's show Evan to the Evan's here. So just because you're.
Everybody.
You're probably watching the video wondering who Doc's looking at, and it's not Snowball. It's a much more handsome version of a much bigger dog. Much bigger. We've all played golf together.
How you doing, dog?
Good. And, pretty
there
good.
You go.
Pretty
good. That's good.
That's a wrap. But I bring Evan up for that, for the reason of the eyeline, because I'm a filmmaker and it freaks me out because looking around. But the one thing that I was going to say is that we played golf together, and you know, I don't know if you noticed it, but you know, whenever this was, I'm sure we've all experienced this type of person who is sort of, you know, only said a couple things, right? New to the group. And I think the first thing I heard was, you know, sort of a disdain for the Greens.
Mm-hmm.
And this has become more in the forefront of my golf experience, right? Hearing those things really, really hit the peak for me. Mm. Because I actually shanked my wedge on 18. And I mean, I'm not bragging, but my practice now is to just literally like say nothing and just see how it feels in my body. And the less I say, the more calm I feel about what's usually a negative experience.
Yeah, I think that's good. That connects with what I teach is a post-shot routine. That's good.
But I just wanted to talk about how would you, as a member of a foursome, mm-hmm. and as a person who has knowledge,
yeah.
and whose job it is to distribute knowledge, how do you deal with a person who's like, you're like, well, geez, I mean, do they even know that they just blamed some grass for their bad performance? Do they yes, know
that's
that,
interesting.
Right?
That's
Are they aware?
Well, let me unpack it a little bit.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm not particularly so much imparting knowledge as helping them discover things for themselves. Because I feel like golf, and most things, can't be taught. They can only be learned. So the role of the teacher is to help the student discover, not just to lay it on them.
You're not talking about swing lessons, are you?
I'm talking about anything.
Anything.
Golf, anything. Learning anything.
Is this maybe why golf is so fascinating to us?
It could be, and it's why it's so difficult, because very often people try to teach it. And they try to say, this is what you should do. This is how you should learn it. Instead of saying, what if you try this? What does that feel like?
Right. Hang on one second.
Yeah.
We're just going to cut and re-roll so the vlog all flows together. It never happened. Keep talking.
Okay. So what I was saying was golf can't, and other things in life, really can't be taught. They can only be learned. And so my role is not to lay it on you and say, this is what you should know, and you shape yourself around what I'm teaching. It's to help the student discover things for themselves and what works for them. So very often I might suggest something and say, and halfway through I say, yeah, that's not working for you. Let's try something else. In many different kinds of techniques, because it's really an art of helping them discover it rather than a canned program that they have to fit themselves into.
Okay.
Now, so as far as that person, I would want them, instead of saying, do you know what you're doing? You're screwing this up this way, that way, the other way. I don't think that's going to really come across. And I say, well, that was interesting. Why is it that you feel like it was the green since everybody else's ball went in?
Well, I could say because they're not mowed consistently and they're not cared for very well.
And so then I would say, you know, that's part of what you can't control. And so like life, golf, you can control some of it, but not all that much, and probably less than you think.
And I think that's a tendency of golfers, right, is to create these moments where we can blame the external forces and take responsibility out of ourselves. I mean, Nicklaus would always say that, you know, every time he hit a bad shot, it was because a helicopter was buzzing overhead or there was a bee that was kind of flying by. And I think that, like with the greens this morning, you know, he hit a bad putt and wanted to resolve himself of that challenge in himself of hitting a bad putt, the fact that it didn't go in, he wanted to give himself a pass. And so it's, oh, the greens, it's bumpy. Like, that's what caused my action.
I think it's a little different.
Many putts were similar to that, though.
I think it's a little different than that. From Jack's point of view, and from a golfer with that kind of expertise, what he's trying to do, and I've talked with him about it, and his intention was not to blame something else. It was not to create self-negativity.
Right.
Not to say, I screwed up, and start to get this thing, which is a problem, and that is anticipating screwing up before the shot. It's something that I worked with Vijay a lot on, because golfers are incredible critics, right?
Yeah.
I've had people criticize a shot and then the ball go in for a hole in one.
Yeah.
Hideki Matsuyama.
I mean, and just if it doesn't go exactly perfectly, it's easy to find lots of things wrong with it. The problem is, if after a shot you find things wrong with it, then what translates into before the shot, human beings are gauged to anticipate. That's something that's in our genetic system. It's been bred because if two prehistoric guys are walking around the the corner of a rock, and one says, "You know, I think there might be a tiger on the other side, and I better get ready to run," and then there is a tiger, and the other guy wasn't ready to run. Well, you don't have to outrun the tiger; you just have to outrun the other guy.
Right.
And so what ends up happening is that you start to anticipate something going wrong. And then it changes your mindset before the shot, and you start playing a shot to prevent something bad from happening instead of playing the shot to make something good happen. So it's a different purpose. Now, when it comes to blaming the green, the key thing is to separate what you can control and what you can't. If you hit a bad putt and then blame the green, then he's not learning from that. But if you hit a good putt and blame the green, then you can say, you know, I made my putt. And so I don't feel badly about the putt. It hit a bump and it kicked it sideways. That's life, and that's the greens that I got.
Yes,
and remember, Gary Player was very specific about this. He always found something good about the golf course. They would say, so, you know, he played like this terrible goat track in the middle of nowhere. And somebody said, so what did you think of the course? And he says, I have to say, this is one of the finest examples of a course of its kind that I've ever experienced. In other words, it was the finest goat track that he'd ever experienced. But right. But he found a diplomatic way to say something good about it, instead of focusing on what's wrong with it. And if we start looking for what's good in our lives and have some, you know, we're recording this around Thanksgiving time. So whenever you're going to see it in the new year, you can make this your New Year's resolution. Find something good about things and focus on what you have gratitude for and what you have appreciation for. And your life is a lot more fun than picking out what's going wrong all the time.
And also acknowledge what you have no control over.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And so then you focus on what you can control, which is, and that's why, you know, Eric, you were saying the title of my new book is pretty bold, How to Make Every Putt. But that's because I separate making and holing.
Yeah.
That you can make every putt, because making a putt means you put a good roll on it on the line you chose at the pace you chose. It might not have been the correct line and pace for that putt, or it might have not been a perfect surface of the green and it bounced sideways. But you made your putt means you have confidence in your execution. And that's all you can do. I ask people when they do lessons with me, first thing I ask is, what's your job in putting? And they say, get the ball in the hole. I said, and that's where your problem is.
Whoa.
You cannot control that. You're not allowed to pick the ball up and place it in the hole.
Then I might miss.
You are not allowed to put the club behind it and shovel it all the way into the hole. You are only allowed to get it started rolling. That's your job. Get it started rolling really well. And then you've done your job. And then after it, it's the ball's job to find the hole.
Right.
And it transforms people's level of confidence. It transforms their level of relaxation and expectations. And it makes them better putters immediately.
You got a call, Evan, or what do you got?
Yeah, I got to step out.
All right, you know what? Let's, everybody, we're going to go to a quick commercial. Snowball's going to get on my lap, and then we're going to be right back. All right, everybody, got a read for you here. Sun care, all right? These two guys were golfers, and they were like, you know what? Fuck the boutique fluff. And so they went out and made some sun care for men, and they called it something cool. They used a play on words. I don't even know. Is S-O-N-N-E, that's the name of the brand. Is that like French? Is that French for something?
It's Sonny
and Cher. Sonny and Cher. So I just want to tell you guys about this. This is what I'm supposed to tell you, right? I'm reading this like I'm saying it. So I want to tell you guys about this awesome new product that I just started using. I literally wear it every time I'm on the golf course. That's actually true. I keep it in my golf bag. The product is actually, the form factor is pretty cool. Have you guys seen it? It's actually pretty chill. It's like, it looks like, kind of looks like you got, like, it looks like the bottle that holds the pills that I give Snowball, you know? and it's just white and clean, and you just go quick, quick, and you squirt the top, and it's not going to like squirt out all over your shite. Anyway, I wear it all the time. It's called Sun Men's Skincare, and it's the only thing I trust to protect my skin from the sun, other than umbrellas and or my house. Sun was started by guys who were sick of making the choice between drugstore men's care products and the expensive boutique shit. It's a doctor-developed skincare for men that is delivered straight to your door. All right, what's great about it is that it's made in the USA. That's very true. And it's sun damage is the number one cause of aging skin, and I've yet to find a product that stands up to UV rays better than Sun's enriched SPF. You know, the truth is, I actually, Snowball's white, as you right know, and I put it on Snowball, and he looks great. He looks kind of like Michael Jackson, but his hair gets a little greasy, but you know.
What color would he be if you shaved him down?
Like pink. Snowball would be like pink and brown.
I feel like that's sensitive right now.
It's very sensitive. What's that? He would look like me. No, he has like, Snowball! Come here, buddy. We're going to do a little investigative journalism here. Get the sun care out. Let's see. All right, so if you look at his belly, it's like pink and brown. All right, but why are dogs' bellies bare? Everywhere else has got hair, whereas men... Human men, we have hair on our bellies and no, well, I have some on my back, but, you know, look at this little guy. How tender is he these days,
literally,
right?
Literally, he has zero skin showing. Yeah. The sun cannot penetrate his fur coat.
Snowball. But you know what? Snowball really starts panting a lot in the sun, you know? He might need one of those little, one of those little fans with the mist in it. Anyway, go check out SunScare. Don't get the wrinkles and redness, guys. Instead, use one of SunCare's two products. They've got one in the morning and one at night, instead of having 300 products like those other assholes. Why do you got to make it confusing, guys? And the great thing about SunCare is it goes straight to your door. That's not confusing, especially if you have a door. That's one of the main barriers to entry for SunCare, is you have to have a door.
Can't get past the door. Where's the laugh track? Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit. All right, go to suncare.com/Eric, SunCare.com/Eric. Use my name at checkout and try SunCare for $15 off. My name is Eric with a K. All right, everybody. Later. All right, all day. Yeah, whoa, can't read. I can't read, everybody. All right, everybody. The holidays are always a great time to literally boost your footwear game. You know I love the Boost. The Boost, by the way, do we even know what Boost is? Boost like came from NASA. Google it, prove me wrong, tell me that there's something better than Boost, and I will literally block you. No, but there is nothing better than Boost. Like Boost is the jam. Anyway, for the holidays, boost your footwear game and do yourself a favor. Hop over to adidas.com and click on the golf section. Could be a gift get a gift for someone else, y'all. But Adidas makes sure that you can't go wrong. And that's pretty true. Like, I can't find a pair of Adidas shoes that I don't like. Right now, I'm digging the Ryder Cup special editions, which obviously you can't get. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that to come out in a douchey way. It's just true. But that style, I actually can't think of the name of the style. I think it's the Tour 360. I love that shoe. It's the most comfortable shoe ever. I'll wear it by the beach. There's the new Addi Power Forged. Ooh, that's a slick shoe, actually. I did get a peek at that. That's on the website right now. Addi Power Forged, and of course, my favorites. Joel knows my favorites when he writes this. The Tour 360 and the Tour 360 Knit. Tour 360, obviously, you're getting the waterproof full leather upper. Tour 360 Knit, a little more breathable, a little more fresh for the hipsters out there. But they both have all of that, super grippy, sticky spikes, soft spikes. Soft spikes. Don't forget the Addi Cross and Addi Pure. I love the Addi Pure. That is the Justin Rose style. That is the Addi Pure, basically, you can wear anywhere. You can wear it to a tea time or a date, and I promise you're going to get good looks. I hear there's also something new coming early next year, which I'm stoked about. I did hear that. I actually saw that. So watch out, folks. Get ready for that. So go to Adidas or follow Adidas Golf for all the latest news and info at Adidas Golf, ADI. DASGOLF. Yeah, check it out. Get boosted for the holidays, y'all. Later. All right, we're back, everybody. Thanks for listening to all those ads. I guess I don't know. We were talking about you know, the experience of playing with someone.
Yes,
and noticing something happening. And what was funny is you were describing this this you know, we were discussing the scenario of watching someone essentially make a mental, was it a mental mistake that is?
To sort no, of... I think that what we were talking about was a particular attitude and a negative attitude where he was always blaming something other than himself.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, it was the greens. These are terrible, terrible greens. That's why the putt didn't go in.
Yeah.
Even though he didn't hit a good putt.
Right.
And there's an old, there's a P.G. Wodehouse.
Oh,
wrote,
yeah.
Wrote all those
I love that
stories.
Guy.
And he said he had a temperament that was rather sensitive. He couldn't bear the racket of the fluttering of butterflies in the next fairway. So it's somebody who always finds something, you know, wrong and something that got in the way. Did you see that move? And I actually had a student, this is in Zen Golf. He complained about something on every shot.
Whoa.
And his friends sent him, said, you gotta do a lesson with Dr. Joe.
Oh, that's nice of his friends.
Or we won't play with you anymore.
Ooh, an ultimatum. This yes. is like a...
This is like little kids, like, I'm not going to play with you anymore if you don't shape up.
Well, it's more like a drug rehab intervention.
It was a golf intervention.
Yeah, good for
it
them.
It was a golf intervention. They said, you're whining on every shot out there, and if you don't do something about it,
see,
you need to fix it. So he came to me and he said, I've tried and I can't do it. I said, well, I want you to stop trying. I just want you to use your awareness. And this is the system that I have for changing habits called Ninja. NINJA. Necessary intention and non-judgmental awareness.
Okay, that's so right. I kind of knew.
You kind of knew. So I had him count. I said, just count the number of times you whine with the intention that you'd like to do it less. So his first round, he counted. He had 60 complaints. He complained on 60 shots. He's a club pro. He shot a 72 and probably 12 tap-ins. So he complained pretty much every shot. The next time, I said...
Now, but you got a non-judgmental awareness means that you count your shots.
But you don't judge it.
You don't beat yourself up.
Nope, don't do anything. Just notice, say, oh, there was one. There was another complaint. And I had to mark them down like tick marks. 1, 2, 3, 4, cross. 1, 2, 3, 4, cross. Okay. And he called and he said, it didn't change anything. I said, that's okay. Just don't judge yourself. Just do it again. And the next time he only had 27.
Whoa.
The third time he only had 7. And his fourth round, he played without any complaints. And discovered that instead of going negative, when he hit one to the trees, and instead of saying, I'm dead, oh, blah, 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 he said, you know, if I pitch out to that spot over on the fairway, that's exactly my 9-iron distance, and I might have a chance to get up and down and save par. So he had a positive attitude that naturally replaced, I didn't tell him what to replace the negative thoughts with.
Right.
A naturally positive attitude showed up. So I think that's an important thing, that you can change those habits.
Right. Well, I think that's one of my favorite parts of golf, is that it's the only thing that actually gets my goat. You know what I mean? It's the only thing that really ties me up, and it's a wonderful opportunity, I find, to... I mean, I love the sweet spot, and I love tricky putts and success, but I kind of prefer that experience of just sort of shouldering it, taking it on.
Well, the wonderful thing about golf is that it's instant feedback.
Yeah.
If you are aware, the second the club hits the ball, and sometimes just before it hits the ball, you see your state of mind laid out there.
Yeah.
And there's nobody else that you can blame for it. That was your state of mind, and you know what happened as you were hitting the shot, and you can transform that. But we were talking about playing with somebody that's a bit difficult to get along with.
Yeah, and I wanted to touch on one thing, that where I wanted to go with this is, it was funny because you mentioned that person is talking about something that's out of their control. And the irony is that just as that is out of their control, he is out of my control.
Yes, that's right.
That player. And could you speak to that? I know you wanted to maybe go somewhere else with it.
No, that's exactly where I wanted to go.
Oh, so we're on the same page.
We're on the exact same page.
How do you deal with people?
Okay.
Period.
So I had a guy, a friend of mine and I were playing, and we joined this guy and on the first tee. And he, in a very deep, booming voice, starts giving my friend lessons.
Okay.
Uninvited.
Bold.
Uninvited. And it's irritating me a little bit. And I kind of say, oh, man, you know, I wish this guy would back up.
Wait, Doc, a lifelong meditator, you got irritated?
Yeah, of course. Irritations happen. You know, the Dalai Lama had a quote. He said, pain is inevitable. Suffering is optional. So, you know, if you get a mosquito bite, it itches. Now, what are you going to do about that? Now that's what came in. So I noticed that he was causing me to itch a little bit.
You were itching.
Yeah, I was itching a little bit. So I, in a humorous way, I said, so when did you get your PGA teaching credential?
Damn, you slammed him. Damn. Serving him up some.
Now this is how bad he was. He said, I had got a different kind of credential from this other online. I went, oh boy, this guy is tough.
He didn't get your joke.
He's going to be tough. No, he did not. Okay. So I said, okay, so this is after two holes of itching. I said, you know what? I have to decide that I'm going to have a different attitude about this because there's nothing I can do about this guy.
Whoa.
So I said, I am going to decide that this is the most fun I could possibly have playing golf.
Okay.
Because I can't do anything about this. I'm just going to decide I'm going to have fun.
When you say this is the most fun I could have playing golf, you mean with this gentleman?
This whole situation.
This moment in time.
The whole situation.
Okay.
Exactly. Now, I then, after having that, it kind of released me from the irritation. Mm. And I focused on my shot, and I hit a really good drive. And then I said, that was fun. I am having fun. And then it built the positive direction instead of going south.
But nothing actually changed.
Nothing changed.
You didn't change your way of relating to the situation
I changed my response to the situation and my attitude about the day. Am I going to make this the most miserable round of golf I've ever played?
Oh, God.
I'm going to choose to make it the most fun round. And each hole I played, I really enjoyed the shots I was hitting and started to have fun and started not to mind the guy so much.
Right.
So what we think is really a problem is mostly a problem in our minds. And if we change our attitude towards it, the problem changes.
Right.
And in fact, he did something that was actually helpful later in the round when somebody else was looking for a ball and he helped him find it. And I said, see, there's goodness in everybody. So your attitude changes the vibe that you send out as well. Mm. And other people relax because what you don't know is whether they're doing their thing to try to impress you.
Whoa.
And so if you are not resisting being impressed or resisting what they're trying to do, then if you relax, they relax. We're going to talk about my latest book that I wrote for parents and children together. But I was just up in Canada as a guest of a Montessori school.
Okay.
And I read for the kids, and I taught
from the
from the Winnie the Pooh book.
This one here.
Yeah, Disney asked me to write that book. I'll let you hold
there's
it up.
No,
hold it up
there's
there.
No curses in this book, so no. I highly recommend. Yeah.
So I was reading to the little kids, and the teacher at the owner of the school, the director who had invited me up, gave me a clue and said, you know, when little kids, these were 3 to 5 year olds, when they start getting loud, if you get loud, they keep getting loud.
Oh.
So you can't talk over them. That won't work. She said, I whisper to them. And I said, that's kind of cool. So the next group I had, I was introduced by my friend, and he said, I've known him for 40 years. And one of the kids, the little kids, they hear the word four and they hear years and they go, I'm 4 years old. I'm 4 years old. And then one says, I'm three, I'm two, I'm four, and they're all shouting at the same time. And I said, how old do you think I am? And they went, I don't know. And they all started whispering. So how you respond to them changes how they then respond to you and back and forth. And you'd be surprised how your response to somebody influences how they respond to you. If you come on the attack, they will be defensive.
Right.
If you let down your defenses and be vulnerable, they will stop attacking.
I'm trying to relate this to golf, but I don't think I'm smart enough.
No, it's very simple. It's the people that you... Everybody has groups and individuals that they don't like playing.
It's the social game.
It is. It's a weird thing. You're playing your own ball, but you're playing with three other people.
It's very strange.
Somebody plays at a faster pace than you, and that irritates you.
I want to play fast.
Somebody plays slow.
How would you suggest I play as fast as possible with a group that wants to really read three-footers?
I would walk really slowly up to the green so that you get there just in time to play yours. Right?
And really? Don't try to commandeer the ship and say, hey, let's play faster.
Well, you can say, you know, if you want to be snide, you can say, you know, I think you could have hit that bad a putt in a lot less time. but that's a little bit of a snide remark, you know? So,
We played in 340, by the way.
I cannot tell you how many times I've whispered to myself, he could have hit that bad a shot in a lot less time. And that's true. It's true. Yeah. And in fact, people have asked me for suggestions. Hmm. And I, in a diplomatic way, I said, I think you get a little stale or stagnant over the ball. You got to keep the flow going.
Yeah, after your ninth minute of reading.
And you got to keep the flow going. So I've got a great story about that. Okay. Worked with Tim Petrovic, who...
Oh, I love Petro.
You know, Vijay just had a great last round and beat him in the Senior Tour Championship.
Oh.
So two of my players won two in the Tour Championship. But we were out in La Quinta.
Yeah.
At that time it was the Bob Hope Desert Classic. And we're on the putting green. He's before he plays. And he says, you're the coach. What do you got for me? So I had to come up with something right away. Now, I knew that he was a big history buff, and I said, well, I'll tell you, two things from Bobby Jones. One, he said, reading a putt for more than 10 seconds is a waste of time.
Well, Bobby Jones said that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the other thing he said was, on every putt, every breaking putt, borrow as much as you can, meaning play as much break as you can for the ball to go in the high side of the hole.
Mm.
So those are the two things I told Tim. So he would get up, and he'd walk around a little bit while other people were putting. When it was his turn, he'd stand behind the ball. He'd kind of lean back, have a look, and go, yeah, got this. Walk up, boom, putt. 18 holes, 21 putts.
What?
No chip-ins, all 21 putts.
What did he shoot?
One and two putts. 64. I mean, he missed a few greens and chipped on, but...
Right, but still.
21 putts.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, not too bad. And without overreading,
right?
And without overthinking, and just play for the high side.
Just a confident visual mind.
Yes, I think all the listeners will agree that it's much easier for the ball to fall down into the hole than up into the hole.
So miss on the high side.
On the high side.
Yeah, the low side is not the pro side.
Low side, not the pro side.
So you know, we are talking about beginner's mind and, you know, the first chapter of Zen Golf.
Mm-hmm.
I was brushing up on that book prior to the podcast with you because I kind of wanted to go deep. Because I think a lot of people, listeners out there, obviously you can download Zen Golf. It's great to listen to while you're playing. You can download any of Dr. Parent's books. You can read them with your eyes and a voice inside your head, however you want to do it. But you know, I think what we can do here is not just recycle that. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about these kind of deeper concepts.
We can go as deep as you want. Let me get the scuba gear on, and I'm ready to go.
Scuba, not even snorkel.
Okay, let's go.
He's got a how deep is
snorkel
your watch
is go? Not deep.
So, what I was getting into was, can you relate this to golf? Right, Suzuki Roshi, author of Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind.
Yeah.
One of my favorite books. I think probably one of yours too. Short read, short chapters really fits that mold for me. basically says that it is impossible to separate time and place. Therefore, complaining is absolutely useless. I'm paraphrasing. Can you expand and relate that to golf? You've got 30 minutes.
I don't think I need 30 minutes. Often people hit a shot and they say, well, can't complain about that. And I say, and if you did, who would listen? there's a line from a movie called Aliens.
Yeah.
It's Alien, yeah. The first one. And the tagline in all the promos for the movie is, nobody hears you when you scream in space.
Okay.
So if you can't separate time and space, then at any time you're in space, nobody can hear you. So what's the point in complaining?
You lost me. You said
there's no point in complaining.
Right.
Okay. And no one can hear you because no one is all that interested in your complaints.
No, but see, that's not what I was getting into. What I was getting into was what he was saying was not, it wasn't complaining as much as it was the idea that we cannot separate time and space. So there's no such thing as, there is only right here, right now. And so what he was saying is like, there's no other option. He was saying like, it makes no sense to say something like, oh, I should have done this.
Yes.
Or I need to do that.
I understand. Yes, that's absolutely pertinent in golf. And that is that, the cliche phrase is one hole at a time, one shot at a time.
Yeah.
Right? You can't play more than one hole at a time. You can't play more than one shot at a time. So the shot that you're playing is the only one that exists. The ones you played before do not exist anymore.
Literally do not exist, right?
Literally do not exist
anymore. What are they at that point?
They're memories, but your memory of anything that happened in the past is not how it actually happened. It's your version of how it happened because our brains do not process every bit of data that comes in through our senses.
Right.
Our brains pick and choose based on previous experiences. So how you interpret a particular experience is based on your past experiences. That's why five people can be standing right next to each other, watch an incident happen, and have five different descriptions of it. Huh. Because their brain filters out the perceptions to match things that they've previously experienced.
Right.
Now, what that means is you have filtered out what happened in the last hole to match previous experiences. So what you're remembering isn't what actually happened. It's your version of what, it's your story about what happened. Like a dream. Dreams don't exist. Okay? You think you're experiencing them.
They feel real.
They feel real. Your memory feels real. You really feel like that's what happened. But that it's not what happened. And where does that exist? Only in your mind. Because you're not on that hole. You're not on the 14th hole. You're standing on the 15th tee.
But someone could argue with you and be like, I made a bogey. That happened.
You wrote that down. But how you experienced it is what I'm talking about.
Okay. So
yeah, I can see the number five on the card. Yes, we agree that's a five.
Yeah.
But how you experienced it, I can't experience. And your memory of how you experienced it is not necessarily how you actually did at that time.
Right.
It's what stood out for you, which is why in golf, if you can choose to take the positive feelings from a previous hole and bring them along with you, you can also choose to let go of the negative feelings of the previous hole and start fresh. Because ball in hand, each hole is a fresh start.
I'll
give you another example.
Okay.
What I talk about, our bodies are always in the here and now. Our location in space is always here, our body. Our location in time is always now. Unless you have a time machine. You don't have a time machine in the backyard, do you?
I don't.
Okay, so your body will always be in here and now in time and space. But your mind is a time machine.
Right.
And it can spend a lot of time in your version of the past, and it can spend a lot of time in your fantasy about the future. Now, what if I told you that the only TV you're going to get to watch from now on are replays of shows you've already seen and previews of shows you're never going to see? That wouldn't be very satisfying, would it?
I would be like, why? What? I'd be like, wait, cable TV sucks.
What? So we spend our time in replays and preplays, and those don't exist.
Right.
So what we want to do is enrich our lives by being more mindful of our experiences in the present moment. And one of the things that I teach for golfers is you'll play your best when your body and mind are synchronized. And they can only be synchronized and harmonized in the here and now, in the present moment, because that's where your body always is. So when whatever happened on the past hole, let it go. Whatever you're worried about on future shots, let that go. And come back to, what can I do to get the interference out of the way and let myself make the best use of my talents on the shot at hand? Because that's the only one that actually exists.
Right. So I had an experience today where I was playing pretty well in the morning, the front nine, and then just sort of started missing. And, you know, it got to the point where I was like, this is annoying. Do you know that feeling, right?
Sure.
What is that feeling? You know, because I can handle a couple misses. No problem. I don't feel it. But then all of a sudden I hit that like ninth miss in a row. And I'm just like, why am I here?
Well, there's a couple things. One is you forgot something that I taught you, which is the post-shot routine. And that is when you miss a shot, that you learn from it. So you do what I call erase and replace. You stay there, and you make a swing until you make one you wish you had made.
Okay.
it's the swing you'd rather make. And then you usually can tell the difference between that and the one that you did. So you know what got in the way. And you leave knowing what you did, and you leave with a feeling of a good swing instead of a bad one, so that your next shot is not a compensation for the previous one.
Right.
And you get to put that good feel into your pre-shot routine, and that way, you know, it's called stop the bleeding. You know, I'm leaking oil here. The wheels are coming off. All those expressions, you get to stop that right on the spot, so that it doesn't keep going bad shot, bad shot, bad shot. Because what usually happens is you go, oh, I forgot to do this one swing thing, and you add a swing thought, and then you hit another bad shot.
Right.
You go, oh, I got to add two swing thoughts.
Right.
And then the ninth one is irritating because you've got eight different things that you're supposed to do and four that you're not supposed to do. You feel like a pretzel. You're not sure which end of this thing you're supposed to hold. And then you say, ah, screw it. I'm just going to get up and whack it.
Yeah.
And suddenly you hit a good shot.
Right.
Because you stop twisting yourself up with all this trying to get out of something that you didn't need to get into in the first place.
Right.
Now, the other thing is, it happened after the front nine, didn't it?
Yeah.
So at the Masters tournament, they have three holes that are called Amen Corner. Do you remember what the three holes are?
11, 12, 13.
Exactly. I knew you'd know. Okay.
Quiz.
Now, that particular point in the round, sometimes the designer puts particularly tough holes, but it's a perfect storm for your mental game. You're a little bit tired, and so you're not quite as focused.
Well, also, 10 is a beast going on.
See, so it could be anywhere from 10 to 14.
Yeah.
10 to 15, actually.
Yeah.
That group of holes, either... Now you might not have kept your hydration, your water, and your nutrition up.
Mm.
So you may be a little dehydrated. You may be a little low blood sugar. Or
if you're interested in diet real quick, we can get into the diet book here.
That's right.
The best diet book ever. Anyway, check it out.
Zen of losing weight.
There's links below in both the podcast and the YouTube video. So keep going.
No, that's good.
See what I did there?
That's a good segue.
I'm always
excellent segue. Okay. So the... or you had... a huge hot dog at the turn, and your body's preoccupied with digesting.
Do they have
that.
Hot dogs at Augusta?
No, they have pimento cheese sandwiches at Augusta. So it's nutrition, it's hydration, it's fatigue.
Right.
And if your body's tired, your mental focus isn't as good. And you're running out of holes, but you're not close enough to the finish line for adrenaline to kick in. See, if you make a mistake on number 6, you have 12 holes to make up for it.
Yeah.
But if you mistake on number 12, now you don't have as many. So very often people's mind turns right then, like, ooh, I had a good front 9. Can I keep it together on the back 9?
It starts to count.
And as soon as you start counting, you start changing your attitude to, instead of, let's hit a good shot here, say, let's not screw this up.
Right.
I got a good round going, let's not. And now you're playing defensively. And so all these things happen right there just after the turn.
Right.
That's the time to be very vigilant, to do a little extra breathing, keep yourself focused and say, forget about the score, just focus on the shot I'm playing. And bring all of my attention to bear on that shot, and let's get focused and really do a good job in my routine, and that'll set you up for playing a better shot.
Right. Speaking of the Masters, I was wondering, do you know how it became known as, instead of, you know, because they don't call it the back 9, they call it the second 9. Do you know why that is? I don't know, actually.
I don't know. I think that they felt like the back 9 would say, well, here's the front of our property, and now we're going around to the back, you know.
And that's your guess?
That's my guess.
Colt, will you look that up? I'm curious. Do you mind?
That's my guess.
Colt, before you do that, can you pass me the black box of index cards that we usually bring to the podcast? You know where that is? It should be right in there.
So my guess is that courses were built on the...
It's empty? Oh, shit. Are there index cards in one of the drawers of the desk? I've got some stock questions I was going to throw at you. You know, what's...
You mean about cattle?
Yeah. Yeah, how do you like your steak?
Stock questions.
How do you like your steak cooked, Doc? Medium, you checked me as a medium well guy. No, medium rare?
Oh,
no. Apparently medium well, you get a lot of disrespect in the kitchen.
Not so yeah, good. Go. Yeah.
That looks good.
Yeah.
Nope. Actually, well, that's funny. These are my Augusta notes.
That's nice.
What are the chances?
Pretty good. Pretty
I've got
good
the phone number of all the caddies.
Well, they don't call it the... No.
Oh, wow.
The rough, they call it the second cut, you know, that kind of thing. And the second 9 simply means that it's, you know, the back 9 has this kind of lower class quality to it. We have the front 9, and then we got the back. That's kind of not as interesting.
We're going to see if we can find this answer out. In the meantime, let's, what, I mean.
We were going deep.
We were going deep there.
Already. I'm going deep.
Let's get Matt. What do you hate?
What do I hate? I don't know that I really hate anything. It's a pretty strong word. What's really frustrating? Well, for me, obviously, since I teach the mental game, making a mental mistake is very frustrating for me.
Interesting.
I give myself a huge pass on physical. You know, I don't pretend to be a tour pro. I know that my consistency level, and I have a huge area of acceptability as far as shots go. Mm. I might hit a shot that's 40 yards right of the green, but if I love the way it sounded and I love the trajectory and, you know, and the flight of the ball, I go, that felt fabulous. Okay, let's see if we can turn it a little more towards the target next time. But so what? I loved how that felt. Right. Somebody said, did you see where that ended up? I said, I don't care where that ended up. I just love the swing I put on that thing.
Right.
So I give myself a big pass on the physical outcomes. But if I do something that's contradictory to what I would have taught my students, then I'm a little frustrated. So then I know I'm taking it for granted. Like, mm-hmm. I'm a great putter, but
you're a really great putter.
But thank you. But I don't practice it as much. And because of that, I take it for granted. And some days I'm a little off. And I went, yeah, I can't quite take it for granted. that I'll forever be making that same stroke, I could use a little practice to...
Right.
Because we all have our tendencies. You know, I have a tendency to come up out of putt sometimes. And
yeah.
That's what the practice is.
Before I forget, though, I just want to mention, if you're listening to this podcast and you have some questions, Doc, will you come back on the podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you'd be our first three-peat guests, which would be, well, number one, historical, two, enjoyable, and three, we'd be able to get to some people. Yeah, so if you're listening in your car, you can email theericlangshow@gmail.com. And if you're watching this on YouTube, just post a comment down below, and we will, I'll print them out, and we'll do it when we do this again in a couple months.
Absolutely.
We have an answer to this second nine here. Let's see. All right, so thank you, Colt.
Why does Augusta call it the second nine when everybody else calls it the back nine?
Yeah, and so they said, the winner is not the champion of anything. Other words you won't hear at Augusta: fans, bleachers, sand traps. What are they called?
Bunkers.
Yeah.
The word traps does not appear in the entire book of the rules of golf.
Fascinating.
Does not.
Sand trap.
And trap is a place of danger, but a bunker is a place of safety. And supposedly, they were named after the sheep in Scotland digging out the leeward side of sand dunes to bunker themselves against the storms. Then they would leave. The swirling winds would fill them with sand, and that's how sand bunkers were formed.
I had known the sheep safety, but I didn't know the other stuff. Did this computer get stickers recently? I love... Guys, this is the work computer. I've had this for years, and I've let Colt has commandeered it, and it has just gotten a pimento cheese sandwich sticker.
Oh, that's funny.
Which is very exciting. Thanks, Sugarloaf. Thanks, that's Ian. Funny. And we got Player Parish. We should throw a Only You Can Thank Your Super. That's one of my favorites. Okay, so anyway, the rest of this article says, the officially preferred words are patrons for fans, observation stands for bleachers, bunkers for sand traps, and first and second nine for front and back nine. The last distinction is aimed at avoiding use of the phrase front side for the first nine, leading inevitably or so to the vulgar...
backside.
As Dr. Parent suggested, backside. So amazing that you got that. That was cool. Without even kind of knowing, you just sort of felt it. You had a sort of a mystical way about the understanding.
I don't do this metal game stuff for nothing, you know.
What is the crazy... Okay, now. So you answered, what do you hate? I'm trying to think Proust questionnaire type questions. What word do you love?
What word do I love? Love.
Oh, that means a lot to you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love that shot. And in the Zen or the Buddhist tradition, when we think of people, and we don't think of any kind of personalities as fixed and permanent. We see two capacities in human beings, two fundamental capacities, the capacity to know and the capacity to feel. And the highest form of knowing is wisdom, and the highest form of feeling is love, particularly selfless love. So that to me is the highest concept.
I like that. I like that answer.
Going deep. You asked.
Mine was probably a curse word that I would... that I might change my answer. Let's see. How would you like to die?
Consciously.
Whoa. What does that mean to the unequipped, to the uninitiated?
With a minimum of fear and with a minimum of trying to escape it, but to stay present with the experience and understand as best I can what's happening to my mind while it's happening.
So that sort of reminds me of my experience of the shank on 18 today. Not avoiding
the pain. Makes you want to die?
No, but taking a deep breath,
yes.
Saying nothing.
Not avoiding the pain, right.
Accepting such an incredible failure, such an incredible mistake, such an incredible shank.
Well, mistakes are what we learn from.
Okay.
Successes are what we can reinforce, but mistakes are opportunities for learning. So instead of beating yourself up, turn your attention to what can I learn from this? What happens then is if you're looking to see what can I learn from this, it quiets the emotion, because insight, learning, cannot, will not, does not happen in the midst of emotional upheaval. So I tell my golfers, I guarantee that.
Unequivocally.
Unequivocally. And I tell my golfers, you can't hit straight if you're bent out of shape.
You need 5,000 bumper stickers. I love it. Hang on. So what were we just saying? Emotional. Well,
you were present with that experience. So it's an opportunity to learn from it. But if you're in the midst of emotional upheaval, you can't learn anything. Insight doesn't arise. If two people are in a bad argument, they cannot see the other person's side. Will not happen. Later, they go, ooh, you know, actually, they kind of had a point there.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say is do you believe that on some level, what you're describing is emotional turbulence and emotional equanimity, I guess? Mm-hmm. Would you say that that is one of the fundamental aspects to Buddhism?
Well, absolutely.
Well, how would you describe it?
Taming the mind.
Ah.
It's like a stream. The rapids are going, and it's turbulent, and it's white. You can't see through it, but a calm pond is clear, and you can see all the way through to the bottom. What people misunderstand, I think, about mindfulness and meditation is they think, well, I'm doing this to calm myself down. And calm is one aspect of it, but clear is perhaps an even more important aspect of it, that you calm the mind so that you can see clearly. The calm, the tranquility is one part, the insight is the other necessary part. So you have to have tranquility to be able to access insight. But the purpose isn't the tranquility. The purpose is the insight.
Wonderful. Last question. What object do you treasure most?
What object do I treasure most?
See, he's just going to sit like this for 4 days. That's the joke.
Probably a something that one of my meditation teachers gave me, that's a symbol of just those qualities I was talking about of wisdom and compassion.
Is it the Vajra Dara? What is it?
A crossed Vajra.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, and it symbolizes the combination of wisdom and compassion.
And it looks kind of like two globes connected?
Yeah, it's like a scepter.
Right.
Yes, that's right. And my teacher's symbol are rays of the sun. Mm. And that's because the sun's rays give us light and warmth. And the light represents wisdom and the warmth represents compassion.
When you speak of you're talking about Ersal Tenzin?
Yeah, and my other meditation teachers, yeah.
So, because right. I just think it's such an interesting coincidence that Chögyam Trungpa Rinpoche, such a pioneer in bringing Buddhism to the West, mm-hmm. A Nepalese guy, right? Save Tibet, get the bumper sticker. A Tibetan guy moved to Scotland.
Yes.
Lived in Scotland, right? Married a Scottish lady.
Yes, English.
English.
But when Tibet was invaded by the Chinese in the 1950s, he was very young, but he was still one of the teachers that was revered there. And he escaped. The Dalai Lama asked him to teach all of the other young people who had escaped from Tibet, and this is in northern India.
Whoa.
And then he was invited, some of the people they'd gone to Scotland, and it was in an area that was somewhat mountainous, and it reminded them of, you know, it was in the highlands in Scotland. It reminded them a little bit of Tibet. So it was cold, and had mountains.
Mm, right.
So they reminded them of Tibet, and they set up a monastery there, And that's where he lived and taught until he came to North America.
Right.
And that was in 1980 that he came to North... No, 1970 that he came to North right. America.
I just thought that was funny because Scotland, the golf connection. Okay, last one. I was visualizing this the other day as I was driving through a beautiful part of the country, watching the sun. And, you know, one of the things that I really... Okay, we'll do two more things. Fine. Whatever. One of the things I was thinking of was the description of the mind as the I'm going to get this wrong, so I'm going to need you to correct it, whatever it is.
Don't assume the worst.
But well, I want to lower your expectations.
They're already low. I try to have no expectations, high nor low.
Yeah, that's not a personal crack. That's just his life view. No, but the Great Eastern Sun and the mountain and the clouds.
Right.
Can you describe? That's a wonderful image that I try to depict sometimes when I'm having turbulence or when I'm just wanting to experience a bit more stability in the present moment.
I think it's a very ancient metaphor. And that is that the sun of wisdom is always shining. We usually take the negative attitude, and that is my problems are how I live, and once in a while I can find some peace. But my default mode is struggle. Hmm. And when I teach mindfulness, you know, I teach at the Ojai Valley Inn, and I teach mindfulness, and I also do work with people all over the world through FaceTime or Skype, you know, video conferencing. We're talking to each other and seeing each other.
Yeah.
But the image of the sun and the clouds, the default mode is I'm struggling and once in a while I find peace. And what's really important to understand is that peace is the default state. Mm. We are peace of mind is our default state. We add on top of it, we add struggle and we add confusion. So if you part the clouds, you don't have to create, you don't have to find a new sun. When you part the clouds, the sun is already shining. Mm. So when you part the clouds of confusion and calm them down in your mind, insight and wisdom come. And that's what I was talking about, the guy who had all this negative attitude about his shots. I didn't tell him to replace it with good thoughts. As soon as he stopped thinking negatively, positive thoughts appeared. They were already there waiting to shine out, shine through.
Right.
But they were suppressed by all this negativity and confusion. So when people say, well, I want to play better, then I say, then do less. I said, well, I got to do this. And I said, see, you add this swing thought on and you add that swing thought on and you add this idea on and that idea on, and you just keep adding more on. And I call that moron golf.
I saw that coming.
Exactly. So stop adding more on and start doing less.
Be a less on. Lesson?
Less is more.
Wait, did you do that one? Lesson?
Less on.
I think I just wrote a book.
A golf less on.
I think I just wrote a golf book.
Perfect.
What would I call my golf book? Last question. What should the name of my golf book be?
Pure Golf.
Pure Golf?
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I had another question, but I forgot it. It was a big one, but it was kind of like the Great Eastern Sun. But yeah, I lost it. Anything else you want to add? Should we wind down? This always happens. We're going to go for 40 more minutes.
I know. I do want people to know that I want to make myself available to them.
Yeah.
And I can do that all over the world with FaceTime or Skype. I just had that lesson last night.
Yeah.
In Australia.
All of your info, we'll put all that in there.
Great.
Can I put your cell phone number in there? That'd be bold. Say no, Doc. Don't say yes. we'll put your appropriate contact info. We can get to Ken, who can set you up with a meeting with Doc.
That's right.
Like I said, I read this book. I'm actually curious because I read this book. I was sleeping in my car at the time, driving through the Robert Trent Jones Trail, and I don't remember. I must have found, there's a phone number in the back. I called this number.
That's right.
And I remember Ken answered, I think. And I said, I think I said, I read Zen Golf. It changed my life. And I think I just said I want to just say hi or something. And this was a while ago.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I think Ken just gave me your cell phone number or something. And then I left you a message and just, I've already told this story.
Yeah, that's right.
But I said, I just want to say thank you.
Well, you are very welcome. It always thrills me to see how the students who have read it and taken it and applied it. Every now and again, I run to somebody, they said, oh, I took a clinic with you 10 years. I still do that breathing thing that you taught me. And and it's really exciting. And that means a lot to me.
Well, what's cool about what you're doing is, you know, you're not, when you buy this book and when you read this book, you're not Zen Golf. You're not fixing a slice. You're sort of like reframing how you walk up to the ball of life,
mm-hmm.
which is, that's kind of like, it sucks to think there are people that don't get that in a way.
You know,
And that's why I was thinking, that's why I brought up today's experience, because I'm here with this guy who I respect. I admire him.
Yeah.
And here I'm watching him make mistakes mm-hmm. with his own life in mm-hmm. the way he basically takes or doesn't take responsibility for something. And I'm thinking, whew, I learned that lesson. How do I help you?
Well, to start with, that's where compassion comes in. And what you described is really, really, kind of a core concept. And that is, people say, well, Buddhism, you're going off and meditating and you're just doing it for yourself. Well, the interesting thing is when you discover that for yourself and you say, you know what? I was causing myself a lot of unnecessary suffering.
Mm.
And then you see someone else do it, what arises naturally, and this is why we consider it a natural part of being human, what arises naturally is a feeling of compassion. I wish he didn't have to suffer that way. I know it's not necessary.
Mm.
See, if you thought it was necessary, you say, oh, too bad, bad break. But if you know that it's not necessary, that you know, as the Dalai Lama said, pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. So if it's not necessary to cause so much self-created suffering, you see that you discover that for yourself, you feel compassion and wish that other people could see that as well. And then the skillful means come in. How do you pick your spot that allows you to communicate that? If you try to do it, it becomes and make them change, it's aggression.
Mm.
You can't make them into something different. But you can introduce things in a spontaneous way that says, that might kind of pop the balloon a little bit. That
right.
might wake them up, but not with a manipulative intention. Just say, that's really interesting. I never looked at it that way.
Right.
And then they go, oh, there's another way to look at it? Boom. Immediately there's an opening. And you can't expect it to show up right then when you're talking to them.
Right.
Because there's a lot of defendedness about that. But later on, you plant the seed. And then later on, you may come and find that a beautiful flower grew.
A beautiful flower. Like the game of golf for all of us, Doc, I really appreciate your time.
Thank
I appreciate you.
You
being so open to, you know, people and me and, you know, people out there who give you a call. You're, you know, definitely changing people's lives, whether
Thank
they
you.
Like it or not. But, you know, I'm excited to now continue to go out there and now look at golf as an experience of, you know, pain optional, pain necessary, suffering optional. And I'm
pain,
really
pain inevitable.
Pain inevitable.
Suffering optional.
Optional. And I'm excited to sort of again as a you know, in the comments and whatever, you know, really sort of create more of a discussion around this.
Yeah. Let's do
Plan
it.
Plan on having you back in a couple
let's
months
do it.
And get to some more topics that people want to or need to hear about. You know, this is like this is sort of like Loveline. This is like a radio show.
Yeah, no,
callers.
And I've been asked to be a master instructor for this program called Swing You.
Okay.
And I'm the mental game coach. So
awesome.
We're going to find a way to get that out to lots of people as well.
Okay.
To have an opportunity to hear some of the tips that I have and take some of the lessons.
Awesome.
Another online program.
And so, and as well, if you want to get more of the stuff, just head down to the description below and check it out. And again, thanks, Doc.
Thank you, Eric.